the name of the values that keep you alive, do not let your vision of man be distorted by the ugly, the cowardly, the mindless, and those who have never achieved his title. Do not lose your knowledge that man's proper estate is an upright posture, an intransigent mind, and a step that travels unlimited roads. Do not let your fire go out, sparked by replacing the spark in the hope the swamps of the approximate are not quite, the not yet, the not at all. The world you desired can be won. It exists. It is real. It is possible. It's yours.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Kalabian, and today I'm here with Mance Rader. So Mance, thanks so much for being here.
Oh, no problem, Mark. How are you doing today?
I can't complain. Just got back from my cousin's birthday party. She turned 4 today, so.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it's been a good start to the day, so I'm in a good mood. Mance is here to talk a little bit about, I guess, you know, philosophy, politics. I know he just added crypto to his website for purchases, so it's interesting to see people starting to adapt some of this stuff in real life. So I wanted to ask Mance a little bit about why he chose to do that, how he's been getting involved in crypto. And I know Mance has had a lot of interesting guests on his podcast. He runs the Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast, and he's written a bunch of interesting books about, I guess, would you say it's mostly libertarian philosophy, or how would you describe some of your work?
One is pure, I don't even call it libertarianism, I would call it voluntarism, if people know what that is. It's just basically the philosophy that all interactions should be voluntary. No interaction should be forced. And my other book is definitely about libertarianism, but I take on, it's called The Kids Are Not All Right. And it takes on the campus culture that we've seen that's really become prevalent, I would say, in the last 5 or 6 years. And it's a real warning. It also is designed towards late teens and college age to, I wrote it as sort of an inoculation before they go off to, you know, if they're going off to college, especially a liberal college, you know, to
which is most of them.
Yeah. To warn, you know, basically to warn them of what they're going to hear, because I'm pretty sure most people are aware at this point that, you know, a lot of professors are spouting and promoting socialism, communism as a viable option, even though it has failed so utterly and miserably and caused tremendous loss of life in the 20th century.
Yeah, no, I certainly have to agree with you there. Because, I mean, I just graduated from UT in Austin, so I went from California to Texas, and I thought at least going to Texas I was going to end up with some more, you know, conservative politics. And I walked into the Young Republicans Club, and it was, you know, 15 people at a school of 60,000. And you go into the university Democrats, and these guys have 200, 300, 400 kids there every time. And it was a very hostile environment towards anyone who had a difference of opinion. I mean, we had protests on campus about all sorts of things, because while we were there, we had the concealed carry bill passed so that kids could conceal carry on campus. So they had a lot of the protesters and a lot of the professors coming out leading the protests, you know, in every one of their windows. They had a bunch of political signs out saying, you know, no one is allowed in my class if they're concealed carrying. So if they're following this law, they're not allowed in my class. And I certainly noticed a lot of that. So how did you start to notice that happening? Was there some experience you had with someone you knew, or was it being on campuses?
No, it was just paying attention. The University of, I believe it was the University of Wisconsin a couple years ago, where a professor, you know, there was a female professor out there, and I mean, she's been in the meme world, she's become famous for this maniacal attitude they have about anybody who would, you know, dare to speak an opinion different than theirs, you know. And then you see stuff like what happened in Evergreen Evergreen last year, yeah, with Professor Weinstein. I mean, that's when I found out that there was a day where black people wouldn't show up to, sort of symbolize what the world would be like if they, what the country, what the culture would be like if they weren't there. I thought that was a little odd, but okay. If it's a tradition, it's a tradition. There's some weird tradition. College campuses are rife with weird traditions. Just go into any, fraternity house. But when I heard that they had decided that they were going to turn that around and forbid white people from being on campus, I just said these people have absolutely lost their minds. They don't believe that they're racist, although that's some of the most racist shit I've ever seen in my life. And I actually, before I wrote my first book, I wrote two books within the span of 6 months. And before I wrote my first book, I actually had the book about college campuses written in my head. I just wanted to write the first book because the first book takes on government and the people in society who give government its power through their belief in its authority and things, and beliefs like that, the philosophy of authoritarianism, as I like to call it. So I wanted to write that book, and then I came out with this book, and I was fairly lucky. The first book was endorsed by, Scott Horton, who I think is the premier foreign policy expert in libertarian circles,
I certainly agree with you there.
and maybe the top foreign policy guy in the country. I would say that I think that that's right. And I sent it to him. We became friends, and he wrote a forward slash what they used to call an announcement, which would be, on someone's first book, it would be a short little blurb on the inside, calling attention to who the person is and what they've written. And then with the second book, when I finished the first chapter, I sent it to Dave Smith and I asked him to read it. And he read it, and then when I finished it, I sent him the whole book, and I asked him, I said, would you want to write a forward for this? And he wrote a forward for it, and that was great, And then as soon as the book was released, like not 5 days after the book was released, I was on his podcast, Part of the Problem, talking about the book. And it's everyone who's read it says it's a page turner. If anybody who doesn't know me from Twitter, I share a lot of memes on Twitter. I make a lot of memes. They're not all political. They're not all societal. Some are just completely ridiculous, and I'm just trying to make you laugh, because if you don't laugh, you're gonna cry. With most of the stuff that I post, and I actually use memes in the book as a jumping off point. I'll take the idea of a meme. I'll present a meme. I'll give you a chance to figure out what it means to you, because a lot of people read different things into memes. And then I just jump off on a commentary. And in the first book, it was mostly stuff out of my head. I mean, I didn't have to look on the internet for much for facts, because I was really just talking about philosophy and the philosophy of desiring freedom and wanting to be, free from tyrannical authoritarian oppression. The second book was a lot different. The second book I actually did have to research, although in the spots where I talked about communism, and the history of communism, what I've done so much study on that, and growing up with a grandmother who, lost all of her sisters in the starvation in the Ukraine in 1933, 1934. I had plenty of source material to work from, plenty of word of mouth material to work from.
Yeah, I think I've definitely noticed that as far as people who push really far back against this stuff, they seem to have some sort of anchor to something in the past. So, for example, my family, they were refugees from Lebanon during the Civil War, so they have really strong opinions about gun rights, for example, because they were, in Lebanon, when if you didn't have an AK in your trunk, you might be getting shot by the cops the next time you try and cross some checkpoint. Or, there are a lot of people who, I guess, they've seen the atrocities that can happen as a result of some of these things, but so many people here, I guess, are growing up in such relative ease with really no nothing to anchor them to the past so that they can take a look back and see how these things might affect them going forward. I mean, is that something you think is contributing to a lot of these college kids, a lot of people who were my peers, so quickly adapting to some of these viewpoints? Do you think it's just because they don't know any better? Do you think it's just to fit in with the rest of their peers? You know, how much of it do you think is really based on a belief system versus just trying to fit in or ignorance?
I think when I grew up, there was a good part of time that my mother didn't work. So, when I left, my mom was there when I left for school. My mom was there when I got home. If I had a day off, my mom was there. And my dad tried to do the best. We could do 20 episodes on my relationship with my dad, but he did the best that he could. They paid attention to me. I knew how to read before I went to kindergarten. My mom thought it
Wow.
was very important that I know how to read, and she told me when I was 4 years old, I was sitting there reading the sports page of the newspaper. I don't remember that, but I do remember there's never been a time that I couldn't read. And they pushed education, but they also tried to teach me values. And most of them, I guess, the social values would be considered mostly conservative, with a lot of liberalism thrown in there. My parents were very, one of my parents would be considered minority, so racism wasn't tolerated, even though I grew up in the South Bronx, and I had every black black Puerto Rican, Dominican, everybody around,
Yeah.
everybody around, so racism wasn't tolerated in my house. Communism wasn't tolerated in my house. And I had a general feeling growing up that, even with my uncles, that, they just basically tried to give you a foundation, a working foundation in your mind of freedom, but, still you have to trust the government's there to protect you, kind of thing. So, I basically grew up for my age right now, I probably grew up pretty normal. I don't see that happening for, I would say, the majority. I mean, I would say a lot of kids who are growing up in wealthy households now who are going to private schools.
Yeah.
I happen to deal with, in my business, deal with a lot of people, parents who are sending their kids to private schools and their children. And they seem to, they're a lot more polite and actually conversational, compared to the public school kids that I also have to deal with. I just don't think that, I think that video games and the internet are raising kids now. There are so many distractions, not to mention, usually a lot of times both parents are working. I think that a lot of kids are not being raised with a foundation or any kind of basis, even if it's off, even if it's not something that I would agree with. They don't have a worldview. So when they get to, the later teen years, and especially when they get to college, I think it's very easy to form them. The great reformer Martin Luther said, "Give me a child before they're 4 years old, and I will own their mind for life."
Yeah.
And I don't see, you just don't, it doesn't seem like parents, it seems like conservative parents try to do it. But what the really sad thing is, there's so much, I mean, I hate conservatism. My most popular podcast is called Libertarianism Is Not Conservatism.
Yeah.
And that's my most downloaded podcast out of any, I mean, out of any, interview or just me sitting there talking. And, to me, conservatism is dead. And I don't want anything to do with conservatism, because conservatism to me is looking back to a time where you believe that it was a golden age, but it really wasn't. I mean, this whole idea of looking to the past and being like, "Oh, those were the good old days," That shit is really new. 250 years ago, no one was looking and saying, "Man, I wish it was 50 years ago when we didn't even know how to like clean a wound and set it properly." You know, times were really rough.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, times were really rough back then. I mean, this whole thing of looking back to a better day is a modern phenomenon, and I just think it's a product of conservatism and so many conservative presidents in the last 50 years. And this, you know, I mean, I mean,
Yeah.
but
I
and I
mean, we were
don't.
lobotomizing people not too f taunt too long ago.
Yeah, I mean, there were. I mean, you're talking about 70 years ago. If they found out someone was a homosexual, they would give them electroshock therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't a better day. I mean, unless you're a complete ma you know, unless you're a complete sadist. But somebody who, you know, someone like myself who believes in liberty and that believes people should be able to do whatever the hell they want as long as it doesn't affect me. I mean, and to go back to the original point. I think that the reason why children, why kids going off to college and young adults, let's call them what they are, young adults,
Yeah.
is because they have no foundation. There's no bedrock. There's no, they weren't raised with any kind of belief, and they get to college and they're taught to respect these professors. These professors, they're the experts, and they start, you know, the first thing they do on the first. I mean, I know someone who just graduated from college, and they said they had eight different courses in 4 years where they were assigned the Communist Manifesto.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, and I mean, we're talking about, you know, a Northeast, you know, good, you know, semi-decent college and everything. So, I mean,
Yeah.
I think it's easy to mold the mind of somebody who goes in with mush.
Yeah, no, I think that's certainly true. I mean, my girlfriend goes to Colombia and she has, protests there every other day. They've got it's strange too how they shift, between, Palestine, and you have all these issues that are seemingly unrelated that are attended by the exact same people. And so it becomes, to me at least, almost more like a social outing. A lot of these kids end up just looking for friend groups, and it can be a very easy way just to find people who are willing to hang out with you at the very least. And with conservatism, I think, and with libertarianism, because I think while they are very different, I think on campus they're very much the same, because kids really don't have a choice of where to go. They kind of have to band together, because really it is just the anti-left in a lot of cases. And by left, I guess I would mean more progressive and certainly more activist. At UT, for example, we had an incident just a couple days ago, or not a couple days, a couple months ago, where they graffitied a hammer and sickle on the UT fountain, because there's this group, they call themselves, I think it's the Red Legion, and it's this strange combination of Antifa and communism, and they're arguing for all these things, but they don't really seem to even understand how they all essentially contradict each other in many respects. It's more just the anti-racist movement, the anti anything that I guess is seen as cultural hegemony. And it's, I guess, very unnerving, especially for kids who are going in who don't really have a dog in the fight, because it's much easier just to go with the flow than to push back against the current, because the current will really wreck someone. And this happened very recently at UT, where there's this professor who, I guess, I'm not defending the guy by any means, but he there was a report, I guess they found his police record, and something like 15 odd years ago he had been accused of domestic violence. And so this Red Legion group took his name, his address, the phone numbers of all his relatives, posted it all around the campus on, every phone pole that they could find, every street corner, essentially calling this guy a rapist and a child beater, and he killed himself a couple weeks ago. And so the kids have taken this to such an extreme where they feel like they're judge, jury, and executioner in a lot of cases, and the administration's really let them run rampant. And I think some of that is actually because these guys need to create jobs for themselves. So the administrators who are going to school for degrees in racial justice, or there are so many bizarre degree programs that you wouldn't believe exist now, and they need to create jobs for themselves. And you look at, UT, I know this is a bit of a tangent, but UT recently sent us a letter asking our opinion on raising tuition by, I think it was $600 a semester. So I ran the numbers, 60,000 kids. And it ended up being about, I think it was a $10 million to $15 million a year increase in their budget. And I went in to look at their College of Diversity Programs budget, and that budget is well over $50 million a year just for the diversity office. I mean, each of the vice provost alone was making over $400,000 a year. So you have this huge now embedded group of administrators who, have a big dog in this fight, and they have to constantly at least assume that there is this culture of racism and this culture. So they have to assume that there are problems in order to make their own jobs relevant within the school, which I think ends up putting more of a spotlight on, the few scattered cases that there are, and there are some. But in doing so, it makes people feel like this is more of a problem. It makes people feel alienated within their own communities. And at the level of a big public school, you have kids essentially just self-segregating within different social organizations. And I know that's a long-winded answer, but at least that, in my experience, is some of the things that I saw at the educational level that sort of concerned me, I guess.
Well, I mean, I believe in what's called the non-aggression principle, and that means just basically the golden rule. You don't aggress against me. You don't aggress against me. I don't aggress against you. If you aggress against me, I'm going to shoot you in the face. And what I just heard, what they did to this guy on campus, if I was that guy, I would have just walked around. And if I see them putting up these signs, that person, that is an aggression against you and against your person. You're calling for violence against somebody. And I would have no problem with dragging these people out into the middle of the street and beating the holy hell out of them. And I mean, I'm not even kidding. I'm not even kidding. I mean, if you are going to try and destroy my life, if you're going to, people ask me why don't you use your real name? Well, because right now I have a job. I work for a large international company. I'm comfortable at that job. One of these days, I may not need that job anymore, and I will, I'd probably consider just, switching and using my real name. But right now, I am so, there is so much that I speak out against. There's so much in my books that I don't think is at all harsh. I believe it's all true. I believe every criticism I make of, communism, liberalism, the state, the military, the police. I am no fan of the police. I make that very clear in my first book, and I spell out exactly why they shouldn't exist. And and that's a very, I mean, that's 2 minute a 2 minute explanation of why the police shouldn't exist, and you can't argue with it. If you want to argue with it, you're not arguing with it from facts, you're arguing with it from feels.
Yeah, or fear.
Fear, I mean, fear is what rules the fear is what people who rule this world use in order to keep ruling it. Or else, if you weren't scared, I'm not scared. If the government disappeared and the police disappeared tomorrow, I'm not going to be fearful at all. I mean, not at all. As a matter of fact, we might be having some fun because
Yeah, exactly.
some of these people who, transgress against you all the time, who you're really not allowed to do anything about it because the police exist and there are certain laws out there. Well, those laws go away. People always say, well, if the government wasn't there, there wouldn't, the warlords would take over. I'm like, well, at least everyone would know that they're warlords. There are warlords rule you right now, but because of the indoctrination of the government schooling, the Prussian school model, you believe that they're a legitimate government. You believe that they're a legitimate force that's there. Well, no, that's just fucking that's
Yeah,
just indoctrination.
that
Look
is
up
justified.
the Prussian look up the model of Prussian schooling where our schooling came from, and you'll find out exactly the mentality. Look up anything written by John Taylor Gatto. I mean, these are people who've been exposing it for years now. But yeah, I mean, I just don't I when the thought in my mind when it comes to these college campuses is you give you call them and you say we're gonna raise this campus. You have 10 minutes to get out, and then you just burn it to the ground. I mean, there's no I mean, if I had a kid who was going to college at this moment, they would be going to trade school or something like that. You know,
Yeah.
they'd be learning to code, or they'd be learning to, you know, HVAC. I mean, I live in the South. They'd learn HVAC. They'd learn something like that. I'm not gonna let them go anywhere near that, even though I know I would give them a great, you know, foundation in life. I'm still not gonna take the chance. And if they wanted to go there, and if they wanted to go there, I probably wouldn't support it. Especially financially. It's a waste
Yeah,
of
and
time.
that's one strange thing that they've done is they've created this dichotomy between school being a place to learn about the world, but also school being a place to prepare you for a job. And in doing so, it really doesn't do much of either. So, I had all of these, half my classes were supposed to be about getting a job, half of them were about learning the world, but when you're in them, no one really cares. Everyone just wants A's to get a job. And, when you think about it from a top-down approach, you would think if these universities are essentially just churning out people for a workforce, if that truly is their intent, then why don't you have companies creating programs for students who want to go work at those companies? So if Apple had its own, college to go learn how to be the most kick-ass app developer for Apple and learn how to use Swift, which is their programming language, and use their devices, well, that kid's going to be a whole lot more ready to work than the kid who just, spent so many years at UT because you're at least specializing them for what they want to do. And instead, they try and give you this generalized education that specializes as you go through it towards the later years. But in doing so, they don't give you the big picture of what do you actually want to do with this education? How do you plan to apply it? And let's figure out from the top down how we get you there. They take it from pretty much the opposite approach, which is here is what we have decided you have to learn within our curriculum. So you have to take this many chemistry classes. I was taking chemistry classes and I was a business major. I'm never
Yeah,
going to be using chemistry.
it doesn't make sense. It's,
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, there. That's why trade school is awesome. You learn what you need to know, and then you go, and then you know, in some cases you apprentice. And I mean, there's no better way to learn something than apprenticing. I mean, it's just, yeah. I mean, and then you give people free money to go to college, you know, which keeps them in debt for most of their life.
Yeah, the only kind of debt you can't ba go bankrupt with,
Yeah,
actually.
and the and they and when you have free money, well, what happens? You know, I mean, when I originally went to college, I went to community college, and you know, if you were a resident of the county, it was real cheap. I mean, it was like $20 a credit. I mean,
Yeah.
this is back in the way back time. And nowadays, because of the free money, everybody asks, how come the cost of college has gone up so much? Well, if I owned a business and they were giving you free money to use
Yeah.
my business, I'd raise prices too.
And it's also unlimited credit, so you're giving these kids a credit card with as much as they need, and they're willing to do it because they're told that's the only choice they have. So, they're not thinking about what $200,000 means in 4 years. They're thinking about I need to go to college because all my friends are going to college.
Yeah, so I mean, I wrote my book, The Kids Are Not All Right, for you know, for teenagers and for kids going to college. But most of the people who've commented on it are adults, you know, people who've bought it, who are just they want to learn more about exactly what's going on. You know, you hear something on social media, you hear something on the news, and you know, you're not really getting, you're getting somebody else's take on it. But my take on it is, as somebody who desires freedom, who desires liberty, it's one of the reasons why, cryptocurrency is why I became attracted to cryptocurrency. Because at first, of course, like everybody else, it was like, holy crap, this price, look at the price of this stuff going up and everything. This is a great way to make some money. But very quickly after that, and I'll throw a name out here that I'm sure half of your listeners will love and half of your listeners will hate, but Vin Armani really helped me with this to realize that this isn't about store of value. This isn't about, oh, I'm going to take some fiat and put it here, because then it'll go up and then I'll pull that fiat out. No, this is about crashing that system. This is about
Oh, sure.
getting rid of that system. And that's what I think that it's a lot to do with the BTC, the whole BTC BCH wars. Because a lot of the people
Yeah.
on the BCH side want to crash the system, are the loudest people are voluntarists, are anarcho-capitalists. And then I see these BTC guys who are talking about, we need the government to come in here and regulate, because the miners can't be private. Well, this whole thing was supposed to be about fuck the government.
Yeah.
We do this on our, we're going to start this thing so we can do this anonymously, so we can do this peacefully. I mean, that's what the Silk Road was about. The Silk Road was about
Yeah.
doing things peacefully, so you didn't have to go to the local drug dealer. You could have some weed mailed to your house.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I think a lot of the crypto guys got started was the dark net, which I think is why a lot of it was so sketchy for so long, but also why you had a lot of these free marketeers who were already using the dark net.
I mean, if Satoshi's white paper is, one of the most libertarian things ever written. The notes inside the Genesis block. I mean, Vin told me to read all this stuff. And after I read it, I was like, "Fuck, this is not. I'm not supposed to be putting money into. I'm not supposed to be taking my fiat and putting it into this, hoping that it goes up, so then I can sell it for fiat." Then he's like, he told me, he said, "Sell your books for crypto." He said,
Yeah.
"Don't buy crypto, earn crypto." So I set up my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com/store, and both of my books are up there, and there's eight different cryptos. Shit, I even put the bank coin up there, XRP, if you have some of those
Yeah.
you want to get rid
Get rid
of.
of. You'll even take those.
I'll even take those, but there are certain places that, you can get gift cards and stuff for that, so I can use that and, try and live on that while while the fiat's getting put aside that I make. And, so yeah, I never, yeah, bringing this back, bringing this over to crypto and everything, it just,
Yeah.
as a voluntarist, as a libertarian, as an anarchist, I just, now I see crypto through completely different eyes. I mean, and unfortunately, it looks like I see it through eyes that a lot of people who've been into crypto for much longer than I have don't see it. I see it
And
as a
I
way.
think, yeah, no, sorry to cut you off there, but I was just going to say, one thing I really think is interesting is you have two real camps in crypto. You have the financiers and you have sort of the more technocratic, the people who have been in Silicon Valley forever, but also the people who maybe aren't in Silicon Valley but really love, building miners or developing software. But they come at it from very different angles. So you have the people who really care about the core of the technology, and then you care about people, you have people who care about harnessing that technology to create better financial instruments. And within both of those camps, and I think more so probably on the financial instrument side, at least in my experience, you have the more libertarian, more free marketeers who see how you can tie this into economic philosophy and figure out how to take it in that direction, whereas the technologists really are interested in creating just the best technology that's gonna leapfrog, everyone else in the valley or wherever else. But what I think they're really pushing up against is twofold again. One, financial literacy of just the general population, which is one thing we're trying to help people with as much as possible. And when I say that, I'm talking about, the fact that people don't always understand how when you put your money into a bank, they're essentially just earning money off the interest of your money sitting in their bank, and they're earning so much money that they have some of the most massive real estate operations that you can even imagine. You know, if you wanted to solve the homelessness problem, just move them into all the bank retail spaces around the country, because they're, you know, every two blocks you've got a bank somewhere. And people don't realize that a lot of these things can be done without any sort of intermediary. So you can lend between people. You know, at the end of the day, you can decentralize everything to a level where people are just conducting business with each other. And if you can do it using blockchain and using smart contracts and other processes to reduce the amount of third-party intervention there needs to be, then everyone's going to win, because you're going to create efficiency, and in doing so, you're going to reduce the transaction fees, you're going to increase your margins on whatever's happening, and you can also do it at such a scale when you combine it with the idea of the internet, that you can have people, you know, like yourself, who can start a podcast, and you can, you know, earn enough money from donations or book sales at a global scale that even, you know, just one person's work is more than enough to help with the living expenses of the person creating the content. Whereas if you're, you know, publishing through a publisher, or if your podcast is on a radio station, then, you know, they're getting their cut, and so on and so forth. So the direct nature of transacting business with people.
Well, worse than dealing with a publisher, the worst thing is they have control over the content. And it's the same thing with a podcast, is if you're on the radio, they have control over the content. If somebody's giving you a paycheck, they have control over the content. And there's also the argument to be made that if you are taking money for your podcast, you know, and I've seen this, and you could see this with Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson's getting, what, $70,000 to $80,000 on Patreon a month, and
Massive, yeah.
it is affecting him. He is saying stuff that he hasn't said before. He is playing to his audience, or as Jen the Libertarian has a podcast, and she released yesterday. It was she said she calls it feeding the beast. You have,
Interesting.
yeah, you are now playing to your audience. You are talking about, you know, Jordan Peterson is talking about subjects that are completely off the wall that he wasn't talking about a year ago. And you have people who, you know, playing to your audience is really, you know, my podcast is all about who I want to talk to. I released a podcast yesterday where I talked to an ultra-liberal progressive professor from Brooklyn College. Alex Vitale. He wrote a book called The End of Policing. And basically what he does in the book is he talks about how bad and how militarized policing has gotten over the last 40 and 50 years. And he goes back and discusses the history of policing and how it formed in the United States and what it formed for. What were its original intents? What was the original job function? And you know, I had one person on Facebook, you know, how can you talk to this guy? You know, he's a flaming liberal. His ideas about how to reform it are bad. I'm like, I talk to him because we both understand, you know, I would want to abolish policing altogether, but if I can't do that, I would want to take away their power as much as I can. And that's what this guy's talking about. And him being a liberal and progressive in one of the, you know, in basically the most liberal progressive city in America, you know, I don't know, maybe you could argue Los Angeles, or that you could just flip a coin. But you know, I'm willing to ally myself with people who have the same goal as myself. You know, we're talking about college campuses, and 40 and 50 years ago, the anti-war movement was on college campuses. And they were just marching. They were, you know, they were
Free
talking.
speech too.
Yeah, free speech, all this stuff. Now, what is it? I mean, you have a perfect time to have an anti-war message on college right now, on college campuses right now, considering the United States government is bombing 14 countries right now. But what are they're more worried about microaggressions and misgendering. I mean, that's ridiculous. I mean, they're bombing Obama. The savior bombed and killed brown people every day for 8 years.
Yeah. And so I guess that being said, real quickly, just to tie this, because something I did want to talk about too was the news. So how much of that is just, do you think people, it's just that it's not getting in front of them. So back in during the Iraq War, we had at the very least reporters on the ground, and we were seeing a good amount of what was happening. So it was far more personal. But now the news really doesn't pay attention. Most of what they're reporting on is what is on Twitter, what people are tweeting out on Twitter, and they won't even touch whatever their advertisers don't want them to. So the advertisers, if Media Matters decides to pull f or threaten to pull funding from anyone's show, essentially the segment gets canceled. That you saw that with someone like Hannity when he started talking about Seth Rich. And so I'm wondering, how much of it do you think is, one, the news media, and two, the problem with advertisers? Because an interesting company we talked to on our last podcast, they're creating a blockchain application where it's essentially a snippet of code so that you can rent out a user's excess memory capacity. I guess it's, I'm not sure if it's RAM or, but anyway, and they're estimating that they can get about 50 cents per 64 gigabytes that they rent out instead of, to Dropbox or Google Drive. And that, essentially the more people that are engaging and the longer on the website, the longer they can keep these files there, and they might be able to eventually match the ad revenue. So I guess I'm wondering, how much of it do you think is the fault of advertisers and news media as far as getting these things in front of people, and how would you think that could be fixed?
Well, I mean, I think it's ideological. The look at what the media has become since Trump took office, and it's been like this for a while, but especially since Trump took office. Print media is dead. It's all but dead, except in, big cities, New York and places like that. So it's all about clicks. It's all about clicks. How many clicks can I get? I mean, you look at, there are New York Times headlines that are just pure clickbait. Where it'll say one thing, it'll say one, it'll present a fact in the headline, and then you get three quarters of the way down, and it says, "Well, we don't, this really is unconfirmed." And for 8 years, they didn't report on what was going on in Yemen. They didn't report what was going on in Syria. In Syria, well, we heard something about Syria, but of course it was, we need
No one
to.
really knows what's going on, though. Like, no one got the real message.
I mean, and they didn't want to say anything bad about, they didn't want to say anything too bad about Obama. But the Obama files over 8 years, they didn't want to hear, they, I mean, even today they say he didn't have a scandal. And I'm like, he bombed seven different countries every day for 8 years. He sold weapons to Mexican cartels. He imprisoned whistleblowers.
Dinesh D'Souza. I mean, look at targeting on that guy.
Benghazi, Benghazi. I mean, the guy was as horrible as anyone else and deserves to be in jail, just like all of them. And but it was, oh, you can't say anything bad about the first black president, or you're a racist. It's, I mean, and then if you vote for, and then if you vote for the one who's not, if you vote for the candidate who's not a woman, well, now you're a white supremacist. I mean, it's just,
You can't win.
it's just, I mean, literally, it's like everything that Twitter has been about for the last 8 years, it has like taken over the news cycle. I always say, if somebody came, if an alien came down and looked at Twitter, they would think that half of the country are marching with torches and burning crosses, and the other half are transgendered lunatics that are having sex in the middle of the street. I mean, that's what social media basically is now. It's just this. It's this clusterfuck of everybody throwing, everybody going into one corner, one far corner, or another far corner. And I'm over here straddling the middle and going, "Hey, how about freedom? How about liberty? How about you leave me alone, I leave you alone? Oh, you don't want to leave me alone? Then how about we split this shit up? How about you go live over there? You live in fucking fantasy land, New York, Los Angeles, or whatever. And a bunch of us will go over here and live over here, and we'll have our free market. And, instead of using dollars, we'll use Bitcoin and whatever.
Yeah.
But no, it's
Like
like, I mean,
Galt Gulch.
yeah, well, I mean, people think, people have this idea that, I mean, how outdated is the idea that one man can rule out 350 million people? I mean, this is this, and then I say that, and people are like, "Whoa, that's the way it was supposed to be." I guarantee you, there was no founder who envisioned a president ruling over 350 million people. I mean, and then I say it like I say it like I say that now, like, we can live without a police force, we can live without a government, and I feel like I'm a an abolitionist in 1850 going, "Hey guys, this slavery thing really isn't going to work out too well." Well, how are we gonna how's the economy gonna how's the economy gonna move if we don't have slaves? Well, how are we gonna be safe if we don't have police? Same fucking argument. It's the same fucking argument. You're looking at something that's completely outdated. Technology can replace police. Technology is going to replace
Absolutely.
everything. The blockchain could do that. I mean,
Yeah, I think
blockchain technology could it can take over and do so much at this point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it, within government, you can certainly replace large amounts of just government practices in general. I mean, if you did put out, say, a government issued crypto, so instead of the US dollar, you had the US coin or something, then you could run all of your taxes through the blockchain because you could know, where people are spending their money, and if you wanted to have a private ledger, then people could also use Monero, I guess. But if you wanted to run certain tax processes, for example, or you wanted to send out welfare without having to, go through and do all the paperwork, then you can just shoot it out into everyone's accounts, instantaneously. I've talked about if the US really wanted to be smart, they could just jump to Bitcoin tomorrow night, and in the ensuing chaos, while all the other countries tried to start jumping over to the new national currency, we could dump enough of our money into, you could convert enough of our reserves for, paying off Social Security. You could switch them, convert them into Bitcoin, and by the time all the other countries had gone up, it would be bid up to such a rate that the US would be the richest country on earth forever.
But here's the problem with that. Government, in its essence, and especially the way it is now, government is a gigantic jobs program, and the blockchain would people would have to be fired. It would replace jobs. Automation always does that. People talk about how they're, oh, there's no steel. Steel isn't even made in the United States anymore. Yeah, steel. There's a lot of fucking steel made in the United States. You know who's making it? Robots. Robots. Why? Because they don't form unions. They don't demand. They don't make ridiculous demands, and they can keep prices down
So,
by
do you
doing
think we'll
that.
get to a point where scarcity has been reduced by such an extreme? Because I think that's really where the Marxists get it wrong. And I think, even within his own work, he said, capitalism is the best thing we've got so far. But I think maybe if you did get to a point where there was no scarcity anymore, do you think we'll get to a point where people don't need jobs? And at that point, if people no longer need jobs, I guess, what's the balance between the government paying them out the proceeds of all these robots that are doing the jobs? And, how do you rectify some of these ideas with what seems to be the future of technology?
I don't know, man. I've thought about that as a book. I've thought about that as a book as research. I don't have an answer for that now. I wrote one article about automation for libertarianinstitute.org. I my my That's Scott Horton's website, Scott Horton and Sheldon Richman, and I have my own portal on there. It's libertarianinstitute.org forward slash Mance. All my podcasts go up there, and anything, any articles I write, I post to there. And I wrote an article about automation, and it was more, I was more trying to trigger libertarians by saying, Yeah, we could lose 50% of jobs in the next 20 years and everything. And libertarians are like, "Well, Murray Rothbard wrote this book. You should read it." I'm like, "Yeah, he wrote that in 1959, guys.
Yeah.
He
Things are
wrote,
changing a little bit.
yeah, he wrote that in 1959, guys." But no, I can't answer that. I don't know where. I don't know what would happen at that. What would happen at that point? I mean, food's the big one. Food is the big one. We need to,
Yeah.
we're always going to have to have, my idea has always been that in every city there should be five or six buildings that are about 50 stories tall and they're round, and that's where you grow the food for each, you hydroponically grow the food for each city, and that the cities would become sustainable on their own. I've had that idea for about 15 years, and I've actually talked to venture capitalists about it, and it never seems to go anywhere. But
Yeah, venture education I think is something really interesting. If we got to a point where students could be more involved in entrepreneurship, and especially at like the high school levels, I've noticed a lot of kids don't get the opportunity to start companies, or especially in inner cities, you talk about how they have a lack of opportunities. Well, what better than to have these small VC funds that are maybe $50,000 at every school, but any kid with a good enough idea gets $5,000 to work on it for the year or something.
That's cool. I got to wrap up because
Yeah, of
I gotta
course.
get going. So,
No, not a problem, but if there's
can I throw
I
some
want to
plugs out
encourage.
there?
Yeah, absolutely.
You were gonna say something. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna encourage people to check out your podcast for one, The Free Man Beyond the Wall. And I love that podcast. I've been listening. I listened to, I think, four or five of them last night just to prepare. So I wasn't sure which points I was making that hopefully might have not have been yours already.
Well,
But
it's I'm at freemanbeyondthewall.com. My podcasts were actually on my website for a while. I moved them off to freemanbeyondthewall.com to Libsyn, which is Libsyn. They're a podcast service. But if you go to my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com, there's an episode section, and I just basically there's a link in there that'll take you to all my podcasts. There's downloadable pages and everything there. Also on my website, freemanbeyondthewall.com/store. That's where both of my books are available for cryptocurrency. Very easy checkout process. I've had it up for about a week and a half now. I've had a bunch of orders. No one's reported any problems, any issues whatsoever. If anybody's outside the country, I'm not supporting shipping outside of the country right now through the website. But if you contact me through the website, there's a contact page. It'll go to my email. I'll get it. I had a guy in Western Australia today. He contacted me, told me that he was interested in the books, and I gave him a redo. The shipping outside of the country is absolutely ridiculous. It's like $25 to ship Global Priority now.
Yeah,
But
it's
I
crazy.
gave him a little reduced price, and he sent me Bitcoin Cash through Cointext through Vin Armani's app,
Yeah, I saw that.
which is an SMS app. And so I'm shipping that out to him tomorrow. So yeah, check that out. My books are on Amazon as well. Just search Mance Rayder, you'll see them. But really check out the website. Check me out on Twitter. I post a lot. You will if you've listened
Yeah,
to
great Twitter. It's really entertaining. I love it.
If you've listened to this whole thing, you could probably tell that I can get out of hand a little bit. So check it
Well, if
out.
you're looking for good memes,
If you're
it's a
looking for
place
good
to
memes and you're looking for somebody who can fly off the handle real easy,
go.
my Twitter is the place to go. But other than that, check out the podcast. I mean, check out I have an interview scheduled this Wednesday with Maggie McNeil, who just wrote an article for Reason on how to solicit an escort. She's been an escort. She's been a sex worker for years, and I'm gonna talk to her about that article, and then I'm gonna talk to her about what it's been like to be an escort, for the years that she's been doing it. And I, to me, there's nothing more libertarian, agorist, or anarcho-capitalist than somebody being able to own their own body and do whatever the hell they want with it. So I said, I support that, and I think it's going to be a great interview. I've heard her interviewed before. Thaddeus Russell's interviewed her, and she's,
Oh, I actually listened to that one. That
yeah,
was a great episode. She
yeah.
had super interesting stuff to say about it. Though she grew up in New York during the sort of the 60s and 70s, is that
Yeah,
right?
yeah. So I'll have her
Awesome.
up. I'll have her on, and I'll release that next weekend. And this week, I'm on Wednesday. I'll be releasing one with someone who just wrote a book called I forget what it's called, but it's God, what is it? Stay Away from the Libertarians. A guy named Remzo Martinez, and it's a hilarious take on libertarianism. But he makes the good arguments, but he does it in a really funny way, and that's gonna be a good one. So yeah, just
All right.
check out the podcast, check out my books, and I really appreciate you having me on today.
Yeah, absolutely. So thanks for tuning in, guys, and we'll be having a podcast on cybersecurity with Cosmo the God on Monday and Quantum Resistant Ledgers on Wednesday. So stay tuned and thanks for coming out, Matt.
Oh, no problem, man. Thank you for having me.
No problem. All right, bye, guys.